everybody.
Welcome back to another episode of Simply Amazing. I'm Tim Ryder from the Apple. Guys, we have a lot to talk about this week. We're going to shift away from all the on-field stuff. We're going to turn our focus to the MLB draft, which starts on Sunday night. I believe they're tying that in with the All-Star break now. I believe coverage starts Sunday night at 7 o'clock on MLB Network. We have a couple of guests coming in. Of course, this week, the Mets took 2 of 3 from the first-place Milwaukee Brewers. Extremely encouraging to see. Jacob DeGrom, you know, while still, showing his human side, I guess you could say, still, you know, just doing outstanding things, you know, going 7 innings with 2 earned runs, striking out 10. It may seem pedestrian for Jacob DeGrom 2021, but, you know, hold that candle to just about any other pitcher, and it's, that's a sun or a star. Things are coming together. The roster's starting to, pretty much all the way healthy. J.D. Davis, I guess they were hoping to have him back by the weekend. Looks like he might be just working in the minors through the All-Star break. We'll see how that goes. Saw Jeff McNeil kind of come around after a very slow start on Wednesday in Game 1. Went 2 for 4 with 2 RBIs, including a walk-off single to score those two. We talked on Thursday at the Apple about Michael Conforto, who's, you know, he came off the IL just 2 days after McNeil, but has had a much tougher time reacclimating himself to the to MLB game speed. And again, talked about it at the Apple. His underlying metrics are showing progress. He's hitting the ball hard, just as McNeil was for the last few weeks, well above career averages as far as hard hit percentage. And, usually that's a precursor for good things happening. Hopefully saw Jeff McNeil kind of break out of it on Wednesday. And, you know, if I were to put money on it, I'd say Michael Conforto's right around the corner. But we shall see. The Mets have the Pittsburgh Pirates coming in for 4. I'm recording this on Thursday afternoon. There's rain in the forecast this evening. There's also rain in the forecast on Friday. So we'll see how many games the Mets get played between now and Saturday. But it could be a very eventful weekend before the All-Star break. We will be back on Sunday just with a quick first half kind of wrap up. Again, we're going to jump right in today and talk with Vinny Massana from Access Baseball Long Island. He's going to give us a little, insight into any, potential draftees from the Long Island, you know, New York metro area, as well as what's going on out east in the Hamptons League. And then after that, we're going to have our friends Steven and Ray come back and discuss, the Mets targets heading into the draft. You know, they certainly have a lot of work to do. There's back to 20 rounds this year, which isn't like it used to be, but it's better than 5. The Mets will have the opportunity to kind of fill some holes, and, you know, they'll fill us in with what's coming after that, as far as approaches that might be taken, possibly players that might be on the old big whiteboard there, or even, you know, I know both Steven and Ray have intricate knowledge of the high school and college games, college specifically. So we might even see, hear about some under the radar, could be stars that could fall into the hands of other teams. But hang tight. We're going to go ahead and get into all that. And we'll be right back. All right, guys, we are back with Vinny Massana of Access Baseball. You guys might have seen him on Twitter. He's very much plugged into the, the local amateur baseball, scene. Vin, thank you so much for coming on and joining us. Definitely want to ask you a little bit about the local talent and with the draft coming up, kind of how that all ties in. How's it going, man?
Yeah, I'm doing well. I mean, busy time of the year right now with the late start to the season. It kind of made everything condensed, but just different more than anything. I mean, last year it was bizarre because, you went from middle of March, going out every day, and then it was taken away. So I don't think anybody's going to complain, but it was just definitely an adjustment, having to a lot more on your plate in a shortened period of time.
Well, I was going to ask, I mean, with everything that's been going on over the last 18 months, I mean, you spend pretty much all your time showcasing high school and collegiate ball players. How's everything kind of affected that process for you?
So in the immediate aftermath, it was a tremendous change not being able to have live games to go to. So I think everybody was just nervous over what the state of baseball was going to be like, when they were going to be able to resume games. So after they canceled the college season, that was a major concern. The good news is that a lot of the local leagues, so out here on Long Island, you have the Boys of Summer is a big one. That's really like 12 to 18 years old. And then they have the Hamptons League, which unfortunately they were not able to get a season last year, but that's because they have players from all over the country. So housing was the issue. But so after they got canceled, one of the local companies, Blue Chip Prospects, they actually kind of stepped in and filled that void where they got all the local college players to play in a league. So that actually occupied some of my time. I covered a lot of those games. They played, high schools and baseball heaven and local field. So that was good, at least for people like myself, to get out, see live games and to evaluate kids. Cause that was a big question mark, was how players were going to look after not seeing live pitching for such a long period of time. But I think a lot of the kids that do play high level, they're self-motivated enough where they kind of found avenues, to stay sharp, whether it be hitting in their backyard or at an elementary school field with their friends. So it was not ideal, but guys definitely found a way to stay sharp. And then definitely once the calendar flipped and I think they get the green light to play high school and college sports, it was full steam ahead. So as far as the evaluation process, it was back to normal, I would say, during the college season.
Now, you've been covering the Hamptons Summer League is of course back in effect this season. I actually have my buddy's friend is playing out there with the Sag Harbor Whalers.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. They're very excited. But now seeing the college players who, of course, I assume have the same level of dedication where, like you were saying, with the high level youth players that, they find ways to kind of keep themselves in game shape or as close as possible to it. Seeing these college players who just recently did have, a season for the most part. Now they're, trying to get, I guess, even more exposure. Are you starting to see that, I guess, optimal level of play again?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think there's any indication that there's like a lagging effect from the downtime at this point, and the Hamptons League, they play every day. That's kind of the beauty of their season. It's like a 40 game season or 30 game season in 40 days. So, so I know they're always kind of pushing guys get hurt. But playing at their optimal level, that kind of benefits them. Is they're seeing live pitching every day, and then they ended early because a lot of the players are from out of state. They have early report times, like maybe the first week of August, as opposed to like the third week, where you'll see schools like Stony Brook and Hofstra. That's usually when they report on Long Island. But so they have to end it early because they want to get the championship season in. So it's actually good for me. I mean it. Because it doesn't all end at the same time. So you got one league that's kind of a little bit earlier, the Cape Cod League, which I've actually never experienced, but I know that it's big time. They end a week later. So some of the kids will actually play they can play in the championship in the Hamptons League and actually get picked up by a Cape Cod League, which is pretty cool. I would like to get to see experience a Cape Cod League just from what I've heard about it, best players in the country.
Right. And then the scouts, I guess, kind of follow that kind of schedule as well, right? Like they'll just follow one championship week to another and then report back with all their fresh info on whether it's next year's draft class or, you know, especially this year. I guess now they're kind of, like you said, condensing it all. You have the MLB draft starts on Sunday. Back up to 20 rounds. I guess with an eye on the local area, I know, are you just focused on Long Island or is it kind of the metro area in general?
I'm really just Long Island, but since it kind of intersects, you know, with the interests of my company. So like from a scouting perspective, I'm just looking at the Long Island based guys, but like, you know, we cover St. John's as well and Fordham. And, you know, those are two of the players that I was going to mention. I mean, as it pertains to the local teams, I know this is a Mets podcast, but definitely the Yankees surely know about the two pitchers I was going to mention, you know, from Fordham and St. John's. Matt Mikulski is a guy that I think people will be familiar with soon, if not already. He was probably one of the best left-handed pitchers in the country this year. He won all, you know, any award that you can get, right up to, you know, All-American. He was named to pretty much everything. So it's kind of rare that you see somebody from the Northeast having their name, you know, mentioned among players all over the country. It's happened over the years, but it is rare. You know, Maine had another kid, actually, Nick Sinicora. He was like right up there with Kumar Rocker for strikeouts with 139. But Mikulski was a little bit lower than that. So he's a lefty from upstate area. 9-0 record, 1.45 ERA, 124 strikeouts. Scouts were at every single one of his outings. That's why, you know, when they had the no attendance rule, Fordham actually had to make an exception for the scouts because they were not about to turn away scouts for a potential first round pick. So they kind of had their own little system set up where they had the gate locked, but they had a Google Excel sheet spread up for the scouts to fill it up. So I watched him. Once, I mean, I watched videos online of him. He's exactly what you would want. He's, you know, throw strikes. He's mid to upper 90s, touches 100 miles an hour, you know, sits in the mid 90s for the most part. But basically went a complete game every time out. Nobody really touched him. I mean, it would be organizational malpractice for the Yankees and the Mets not to be in on him. And just the way, you know, where the draft picks are this year, you know, the Mets at 10, I don't think you'll see them take him in the first round because it's a little bit high just based on the mock drafts that I've seen. But Keith Law actually put out his mock draft last week and had him going to the Yankees. So it's just something to keep an eye on. You know, I definitely wouldn't want to see a local kid go, you know, lose him to the opposite team. So I'm sure it's going to be in the Mets front office's mind because surely they know about him. And then actually closer, you know, closer to Citi Field is St. John's than Fordham. And you got Nick Mondak. He's another lefty. He had a 1.92 ERA this year. He was the ace of the Johnnies. And I think, you know, he's not a first round pick, but that's another name that you might see from the collegiate ranks that they might target because he was another one. Every one of his outings, there were scouts there.
Now, as far as the high school, I guess, atmosphere, are more eyes on, well, I guess this year might have been a little bit different, but in general, are more eyes on high school fields or are they on travel fields?
It's a good question. Overall, high school, I think there's more interest in that from the travel games. I mean, if you're looking at like your garden variety travel league game on a Wednesday night, it's probably just going to be the parents. But, you know, you have these big tournaments like in East Cobb, Georgia, the WWBA, where there'll be 150 schools there. Another big one is in Fort Myers. They have the national championship. That's at the end of October. There's usually, you know, 100 plus schools there. So, you know, really the high end schools, they only go to like particular events where they know it's going to be players that they're looking for. So, I mean, if you're a player from the Northeast, a travel player, it doesn't matter if you're in 10th grade, 11th grade, 12th grade, like, it's good to get those experiences, but, you know, it's not necessarily worth your time if you're going there to get seen by Vanderbilt. I don't know if they're looking necessarily for a Northeast player. There's just not as much quality here as the guys in the South, as we know. So Yes, to answer the question, though, there's more interest in the high school from like audience perspective, like my audience. But when it comes to where you're going to see the scouts and the Division I coaches, it's usually at those like select events.
Yeah. Now, I guess that kind of leads me right into my next question. You're pretty well plugged into the, I guess, the travel team, youth academy, sort of, I guess, that sort of world. Being as it may, as it is, I should say, that, you know, Long Island or just even the metro area in general, it isn't what you would call a hotbed for baseball talent. Just, you know, the weather itself is enough of a disadvantage. It got, you know, kids, unless they have the means to latch on with one of these, you know, nationwide or even region wide travel teams, you know, for people who might not have that ability, are there other ways to, or you just have to be head and shoulders that much better than the next guy to kind of get noticed?
Well, I mean, I think the way to really cut the line, so to speak, is if you have like a school in mind, a lot of times the easiest way is just to simply contact that coach. Almost every school now has a way to make money. They'll have their own camp. So it's like a guaranteed way for you to get in front of that coaching staff. So I usually will recommend that to parents and kids. Like, look, if you don't have, you know, money to go to showcases all the time, or that a lot of these teams now, they're $3,000+ for the summer. So if you really just want to like get the most bang for your buck, and you want to go to a Stony Brook or whatever, a Seton Hall, we just had a kid commit to there from Chaminade High School. I just posted. If you just want to like get the most bang for your buck, pick the top three or four schools, contact those coaches, and you can go to their camp, and the head coach, the recruiting coordinator, the pitching coach, the hitting coach, they're all going to be there. Whereas if you go to a tournament, maybe one of those guys is there. Most likely it's going to be the volunteer assistant. So that's really kind of like the ugly truth of the fact is that you could pay all this money to go to a showcase, be on a travel team, and you might not even get seen by the person that makes the decisions. So that, you know, that would be like the way to cut the line. Obviously there's advantages to playing on travel teams. You know, you're still gonna develop a sense of team chemistry, develop your skills, you know, just, I don't know, getting out of the house. Like it could be as simple as that. Like there's advantage to just developing your game. But if money is an issue, and we know that baseball is very, it's discriminatory in the regard that you don't see a lot of people from the lower income communities. It's a sad truth. You know, it's very specific to kind of how you grew up, who your parents are. And as you see, a lot of the players that do make it from the United States, you know, they do tend to come from privileged families. So that's the, I think that's the ugly truth to the game of baseball on the amateur side.
Yeah, but it's so cool that there's a way, you know, I don't want to say a way around it, but, you know, if a young player who might not have the means to take the, well, now traditional way to getting eyes on him, if he's a talented player or her, because, you know, this is goes all ways as far as gender now, but you know, if I guess the opportunities are still there, and that's encouraging. Quick shout out to Baseball Generations. You guys might've seen Dom Smith's involved with these guys. It's a league wide thing, but they're trying to kind of give low income areas the opportunities that really haven't been afforded to them, and try and actually work out some things with them now. Hopefully keep an eye out in the future. Hopefully we'll have some stuff popping with them. But
they did a home run derby, I think, right?
I'm sorry?
I think I saw on their Instagram they did a home run derby, and they did like a great job with the content. And it really popped. Like obviously it was a good event for the kids, I'm sure, but it looked even cool if you weren't there, just to see how they edited it and whatnot. I would like to do something like that.
Yeah, no, we were speaking and I, you know, I had an idea, and I was talking to my buddy Chris Simon, who's involved with them, and yeah, we're trying to get something going, I guess, more centralized on the New York side. So if that comes to fruition, I will definitely be in touch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. And also there was a couple of the high school players that I wanted to mention.
Please. Yeah. I'm all ears on that end.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, there's always a couple of kids from our area that get drafted. I mean, everybody always tends to mention Stroman and Matz, because those are the ones that are, I would guess, the most visible. But, you know, we actually have, you know, probably what, 7 or 8 Long Island natives that are in the major leagues right now that people don't really, you know, give that much attention to, like Anthony Kay, you know, Homer Met, we know about. Nick Tropiano is actually on the Mets. He went to West Islip. But
right.
So every year there's usually a couple of kids that get drafted. And right now there's – it's actually pretty impressive because I don't know if there's ever been two pitchers, let alone three, that are active right now in that are high school – that just graduated high school that have a chance to get drafted. So they just had that MLB Combine. And they only invited 80 high school players. So it was the best 80 in the country. And two of them were local kids. So Rafe Schlesinger, R-A-F-E Schlesinger, he goes to St. Jermaine's High School. He is about 6'3" lefty, and he's sits in the low 90s. You know, I've seen him as high as 94. He was at the area code tryouts last year. Probably that was more of an adrenaline rush, I would say, because you're thrown in front of scouts and it was hot out in July. But sits in the low 90s. He just won the Paul Gibson Award, which goes to the top high school pitcher on Long Island, in Suffolk County, rather. Yeah. But if they wanted to extend that to Nassau, he probably would have got it too, because he pitches against the best competition, which is League One, you know, the largest high schools, the Comax and Pat Meds. And hold on one second. Client, sorry. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And he had a sub-1 ERA and struck out two guys per inning. He had very tough luck. He basically had the Jacob DeGrom luck from, you know, pre-2021, where unless he threw a no-hitter, he would get tagged with a loss. And he actually threw a six-inning no-hitter, came out because of the pitch count, and then he lost on a sacrifice fly. His team lost on a sack fly. So just to give you, you know, an idea of how the win stat is misleading, of course, that's a game that he got tagged with. I don't know if he got the loss or the no decision, but he struck out 17, gave up no hits in six innings and didn't get the win. So that's a kid that has been getting a lot of attention recently. And it's something that I'm excited about, because I think the first time I posted a video of him, he was in like ninth grade when I was watching him, and I was like, this kid's good. And his pitching coach told me, no, he's going to be like Chris Sale. So he's, you know, he's got a size 16 foot. So to me, that tells me he's still got some growing. He might even grow a little bit more. I was talking to his father, and he's got a 6'7" brother. So there's a chance that he even might shoot up a couple inches. So he's committed to Miami. And in the event that he doesn't sign, I think we'll be hearing about him again in the future, but definitely has a chance to get drafted if you're invited to that MLB Combine. So that's a name to keep in mind, Rafe Schlesinger. And then another one is Jacob Steinmetz. So he's from Woodmere. They actually canceled his team's high school season, so mm-hmm. he wasn't going to have a senior season this year. He goes to a very small private school, so they had made that decision pretty early on. Mm-hmm. So his father actually sent them to Elevate Academy, which is a private school in Boca Raton, Florida, just to play, get some innings in front of scouts. And it was a great idea, because it was always going to be a question, I think, about how he was going to pitch against good competition, because his league was inferior. So he went down there, pitched against great competition. Guys were able to see him up close when maybe they wouldn't have if he stayed on Long Island. And he got invited to the combine as well. And he actually touched 97 miles an hour. He's a 6'5" pitcher. He's committed to Fordham. And his spin rates is really what got everybody's attention, because his curveball spin rate is like over 2,800 on average. So that's something that, from a high school kid, that's just head and shoulders above, I think, the norm.
That's major league levels.
Yeah. And they had him a perfect game, did a top 500 or top 200 ranking or whatever. And they gave him a fourth round grade. So even with the 10, the condensed draft, which is going to be 20 rounds, mm-hmm. I still think he's going to go. So, I mean, even if just those two kids go, that would be two probably inside of the top 10. And then there's a third. His name is Tommy Ventimiglia. He's a right-handed pitcher from Longwood High School. And he's probably the most high.
Kid just sounds – he sounds long.
Yes. Tommy Ventimiglia.
Oh, that's my boy, bro. I'm a big fan. I'm a big Tommy Ventimiglia fan.
Yep, I think the last name in Italian means 20 million. So that's just a money last name. He's he's another one. He's 6'4" righty, power pitcher, 90-92 for the most part. And actually, he got invited to a pre-draft workout at Petco Park the other day, and he was pitching in front of AJ Preller, the Padres GM. So I mean, that to me, that just tells me that it's real. The interest real. They invited I think he told me they invited like four or five pitchers. So not very much. So that's three kids that, you know, not just like late round favors because of who they know. I mean, those are kids that are, you know, possibly future major leaguers, in my opinion. So if I'm the Mets, those are guys they obviously know about, all of them. You know, they're not taking more than one. I would imagine they're not just here to help out Access Baseball. But, you know, I'm hoping from my perspective that, you know, they get one of them just because it would be a good look for Long Island. It'd be a good look for me, kids that I've tried my best to promote. And I think it would be good for the organization to have high quality kids and, you know, potential impact players in the future. So we don't really have too much position players. That's definitely the one knock on Long Island. We very rarely develop legitimate major leaguers. Frank Catalanato was probably one of the last ones. And I don't know if you saw, he just got announced as a Hofstra coach yesterday. And
that's right.
You know, he retired 10 years ago with the Mets. So that's where we got to step it up. But I mean, we definitely, in terms of arms, we are, you know, right up there with any state, I would say. You could, you know, go ahead, put California, Texas, and Florida there. I don't know how many for the size of Long Island. Like, I think it's pretty impressive.
Oh, for sure. And like you were saying, I mean, if any one of those three guys, or, you know, God willing, all three of them get drafted, that's just such a huge step forward for Long Island. You know, I'm a little bit older. I'm 37. So I was playing junior high ball when Billy Koch was in West Babylon High School. And, you know, that was huge. And that kind of spurred a whole generation. And, you know, down the road, a few years later, you have your Marcus Stroman's and your Steven Matz's, and that spurred a whole generation. You know, it's kind of a cycle. You just love to see it. But
yeah, Koch went to Clemson, right? Yet. I was just going to say, Koch went to Clemson from West Babylon, right? That's a very big jump.
Oh, I mean, D1, big school. He made very big waves in the Olympics in 96. And then, took a 99-mile-per-hour fastball in high school and went to the pros, and he had a very nice career.
Yep. Another good luck for Long Island.
Oh, yeah. But, Vinny, this has been great, man. Where can everybody find you on social media?
Thank you, Tim. Access Twitter is at AXESS Baseball, all one word. And on Instagram, which is probably our biggest platform, I would say, is there's just an underscore in between that. So at @Access_Baseball.
Excellent, man. And what's on the docket for you guys this summer? I know, are you going to try and get over to Cape Cod?
Yeah, you know what? I'm actually talking about it with my wife. We might go and just kind of make like a weekend trip out of it, because the season's going to be canceled by the time we're going to go. So I kind of just wanted to take a look at the fields and whatnot. I would definitely like to go and catch like a bunch of games for a trip, but I don't think I'm going to be able to get there anytime soon. But another thing I was going to do is go to the Field of Dreams, which that's always been a bucket list thing of mine, is just walking on the movie site. Obviously nothing to do with scouting or, you know, getting or helping kids. But to me, it's just something that I always wanted to do. So I said, you know what, let's book it.
Oh, yeah. I'm long overdue for a trip back to Cooperstown myself. I have a couple of things on my list this summer, too. But
oh, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on.
My pleasure, Tim.
We will be we'll certainly be checking back with you once I guess the spring seasons roll back around next year. And certainly, we want to hear about any up and comers as they pop up, please.
Sounds good. My pleasure. Thank you, Tim.
All right, buddy. We'll talk to you soon. All right, everybody. That was Vinny Massana from Access Baseball. Again, check him out on Instagram, Twitter. Check out the website. And again, that's AXESS Baseball. Long Island high school coverage, collegiate coverage. Really, a lot of up and coming, very, very good ball players there. We're going to take a quick break, hear from our sponsors, come back and talk to Steven and Ray about the Mets' upcoming draft approach. Hang tight. Count it off. All right, 3, 2. Welcome back. As promised, we are here with two very good friends returning to the show, Steven Josiah, Roberto Correa. Guys, it is draft season. This is in your cocina, as they say, and yeah, I think I'm mostly in the dark when it comes to draft season. I know the big names, but that's about it. I do know the Mets have some holes, and I know you guys have an extremely good grasp on what the upcoming next few days, or starting Sunday, I should say, are going to entail. So Gentlemen, welcome back to the show. And what's happening?
Oh, thanks for having us back. I feel like it's like since we last spoke, I've just been sitting at a desk waiting for the draft to happen. So now that the draft week is here, I can finally do something.
We've just been marking days off the calendar.
Just crossing them off, yep.
Scratching ones into the wall.
So, guys, the Mets, you know, as far you can look past the bigger names in the Mets system, you could even look past some of the more unpolished gems, you might call them. On an overall basis, the Mets system is somewhat barren. This is going to be, especially with the expanded back into 20 rounds, this is going to be, I guess, a time for the Mets to replenish. Are there any specific target areas? Roberto, I will start with you, my friend.
When it comes to the draft, and I think this is something that we typically agree on, is just that you never draft for need. You're always kind of going for the best player on the board. And particularly because if you have a player of higher value through the draft, then you can fill whatever need you have through whatever developed players that you build up in your organization. So I'm kind of looking at this away from need, unless there are players that the only caveat in my sight is if you have guys who have very similar projected outcomes, despite the fact that they're different positions. So if you expect this guy's going to be able to provide as much value as this guy, so you're looking at not just future value the way the scouts tend to look at it, but sometimes guys look into potential future war as well. So if you're working in the same area, then yeah, kind of go for the need, but I think Mets are typically a best player available kind of team.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is something that more fans should know, because a lot of sports fans follow the NBA and NFL draft if you're a fan of those leagues, because those players typically help right away. They get to be plugged right in, or maybe sit for a year behind somebody, but the presence is felt pretty soon. And also with football and basketball, you can build around those players, especially when it comes to quarterbacks in the NFL, or you're being one of five guys on the court at any one time. In basketball, the presence is a little bit more immediate, certainly more immediate, and it's felt a little bit more in those sports. With baseball, it's not, and you have to wait a lot longer, and a lot can change in an organization in the time where you're waiting for those prospects to develop. And then, as you know, also in baseball, injuries and changes in performance and trades and leaving for free agency happens all the time. So yeah, like Ray said, you take the best player available. And if you have a log jam down the road, you deal with that when it comes. I mean, the Mets might be looking at one at third base right now with their system as it is. So like best prospect in the Mets system is Francisco Alvarez. Would that keep the Mets from drafting Henry Davis if he's on the board at 10? Spoiler alert, he's not going to be available at 10. He's the best college hitter in the country right now, happens to be a catcher. But if you were, yeah, you're taking Henry Davis.
Yeah,
you 100% do that. You don't worry about position. You deal with that later, because a lot changes both with that individual prospect as well as the team and organization in the years that they're taking to develop. So 100% draft the best player available. I think the one thing I will add on to what Ray said is that if you have two prospects of very, very similar grades, then maybe take the one who's a little bit closer to the bigs for a team like the Mets, who are in a open window of competition right now. So if you have, let's say, a future value 50 player on the board, take the college guy instead of the high school guy. Smaller range of outcomes, quicker to the big leagues. That's the only thing I think might be a tiebreaker for the Mets, because like, hey, we're winning now. A college guy could help us in 2 years. High school guy might be 4 or 5 out. Let's take the guy who can help us in 2024 instead of 2026.
Kind of the closest, the last time that we did something like that, I would think, kind of would be the Conforto draft, wouldn't you say? Because like he was a quick riser as well.
Yeah, you don't really know. I mean, you don't really know if Conforto was number one or number two on their big board. And, you know, so like every team has their own big board. They don't care what Jonathan Mayo says. They don't care what Ben Badler says. They don't care what Keith Law says. They've done their scouting, their analysis. They've crunched numbers. They've seen these guys, and they will make a list, one to how many ever hundred long. And I would be shocked if I heard that Jared Kelnick wasn't maybe number one or number two on that big board that they have. The fact that they were able to draft him at six and get him from a million under slot is, it was just really good fortune for the Mets that year. But I know they thought extremely highly of him. So yeah, Conforto, it might've been if they had a tiebreaker with him and another player, or it might just been that they saw him as the best college bat in that draft, or the best bat in that draft, and they just took him because they saw him as a gift there. I actually like that the Mets kind of do things this way because they are good at it. And yeah, so it could have been, though. They could have taken him over. I forget who else was, who the good high school talent was in that draft, but it could have been one of those coin toss things because the Mets were good at the time and trying to stay good.
Now, without the, I guess the general, I should say without the, with the lack of depth in the upper levels of the Mets minor league system, do you think they have in the same vein as Conforto, a more, I guess, a focus on the college player as opposed to the high school?
No, again, because I think that this regime tries to get the best talent that they can. I think maybe the more, the better answer to that question is the fact that there's just better college talent in the area of the draft that the Mets are picking at 10 than there is high school. The high school ranks, it might not be that the talent isn't as good. It might also just be underexposure. We had one entire year missed to COVID, a delayed start this year. There just hasn't been a lot of gameplay. So there might just not be as much knowledge about the high school players, but it's also a weaker class. And I think much of the talent in the top 15 picks or so is in the college ranks. I think you're going to see more college players go in the first half of the first round than high school.
Just another thing I wanted to mention as regard to the Mets staff. Mm-hmm. So it may not happen through the draft this year, but I wanted to point out that, you know, the CBA is up at the end of the year, and it's kind of been taken as it's going to happen that people are going to be able to trade draft picks after this year, and that it's possible that it'll be in the next CBA, and that's going to change the landscape of how teams provide for their immediate depth. Now, I mean, it's kind of an unknown at the moment because we don't know how GMs are going to look at draft pick trading after this, but it's kind of going to open up the floodgates in a sense. And because there's going to be teams who, well, I don't want to like point anyone out, but maybe the Pirates who don't want to sign the big bonus guy, or they feel mm-hmm. they can go under slot and they might have a number one or number two pick, but they know that they could get their guy at number five or number six on the board. So that's just one thing to think about. So
It's so funny you bring that up because the change under the CBA to give those bonus slots and penalties for going over bonus was supposed to make it more fair. It was supposed to make richer teams less able to just buy out draft prospects. And, you know, at least from the way I see this, it didn't work. Rich teams are still going to spend money in the international world as well as the just free agency in general. So I never really liked that. If you want to invest in the draft and spend a bunch of money there, I think you should be able to. But I love the idea of trading draft picks just because this is what we think about all the time, right? Is how much is a 17, 18 year old prospect worth to an organization, especially with the range of outcomes that someone like that can have. And here, let me throw this out for you because I wasn't expecting to talk about this, but I've just been super curious about this. The Mets have pick 10. I think everybody in the Mets organization would love to draft Jack Leiter, son of course, of Mets great Al Leiter. And it would be really cool to see his son in orange and blue, but you probably would have to pick, almost certainly would have to trade picks with Texas at number two. So you'd be moving up 10 to two to get him. What would you have to give up to move up eight spots in a draft for a player who might not even make the big leagues? Again, I just want to remind folks listening, roughly one third of first round draft picks do not even make the big leagues. I'm not talking about being good. I'm talking about set foot in a major league stadium, right? So technically, Gavin Cecchini, the worst Mets first round draft pick in the past 10 years, was a success. He actually did make the big leagues. The Mets have had an extraordinary success rate on this under the current regime. But again, the bust rate is very, very high compared to other sports. So given that, but also given the fact that Jack Leiter is a very, very nice prospect, probably going to be the first pitcher off the board, probably within the first two or three picks. What would you have to give up to get it to make that trade?
See, that's a conversation that we still haven't had. And I don't think that that conversation is one that has been had particularly amongst GMs right now, because it's not a realistic possibility at the moment. So I don't think there's really any way to know. And then we can speculate on it. I mean, do you have something in mind that you would give to move up to two for Jack Leiter right now?
Well, I see four ways that you could trade. You could trade international bonus dollars. You could trade existing prospects. You could trade existing major league players, or you could just trade just money, right? You could buy them out.
You could also swap picks. You say, oh, you know, you
take, for sure, that
I'll take your two and take my second.
Right, round. Right, yeah, exactly. So I here I'm assuming that we're swapping the two and the 10.
Yeah.
And then I would think that you'd have, if we're talking prospects, I wouldn't ask for a prospect comparable to Jack Leiter, because again, you're getting that number 10 pick back, but probably a lesser one. So if you're maybe a kind of back end of a top 10 prospect and some international bonus money or something like that, I don't know. it's an interesting thought experiment. And if this happens, the first team to make a trade is kind of going to set the market, right? And set the standard for what you'd have to do to move up in a draft and how they see those picks assigned. So yeah, I would be fascinated by draft pick trading. And I think if that happens, and it should happen, it's going to be a blast for us fans who kind of live and breathe this stuff.
I wouldn't be shocked to see it. I guess maybe limits set on it, whether it be, oh, you can only move comp picks, or, you know, maybe you can only move one pick within a draft. Yeah, I'm not sure. I have no idea how this would all, you know, break down. But this, like you said, there's so much risk involved with it. I'm very curious mm-hmm. to see how that would all shake out.
I will say, I think the smart teams will take advantage of it, and the Mets are a smart team. They have been under Tommy Tanis and Mark Trumbota for a while, and I think they're only getting smarter with Steve Cohen as the owner instead of the Wilpon. So if this happens, I would say that the Mets are one of a handful of organizations that would really be able to optimize it.
You got to hope so. As far as, I guess, you know, you guys – we were talking before you came on the air, and you guys got like the whole first round pretty much, you know, at least, you know, there's no predicting down to the T, but you guys have a very good idea of how things are, you know, how this cookie is going to crumble. Do you see any sort of landscape shifting moves or picks being made, changing the Mets' fortune?
I'm so glad you asked that. Again, I just mentioned the Pirates a little earlier, and they seem to be a massive wild card in this draft.
Mm-hmm.
And me and Steven and our friend Jordan and our other friend Doug over at Mets Minors, we have a little chat where we kind of discuss these ideas together all the time. And we can just see the Pirates doing something like taking someone like Henry Davis just right off the board and just throwing off the board for everyone. Because now instead of thinking, oh, well, this was our top guy, we didn't expect this dude to be available here, teams are going to start having to think, oh, wow, now this is available to us. Do we take this chance here? Or do we stick to the board that we currently have? And of course, if it's a Jack Leiter, for a lot of people, they're going to go with that option. It's like, suddenly Jordan Lawler or Mayer, like any of these top five guys becomes available lower on the board, mm-hmm. it's going to become an instant pick for a lot of people. It's almost like when you forget to join your fantasy baseball draft in time and you get the auto pick. It's like, no, we're going to make this choice for you kind of thing.
Right.
Go ahead. Yeah, it's something to say.
This is a very odd draft if you're trying to mock. I've been mocking drafts since 2012. There usually becomes a time around now for sure that you have a good sense of the top five, if not 10 picks. In fact, one year it was around that time, Jonathan Mayo correctly predicted the entire first round, which is absolutely unheard of. I mean, in any sport, but especially baseball, but that it can become fairly predictable, especially with, you know, which teams are holding private workouts for which players. And then you can do some figuring out based on tendencies of these teams. This year is just crazy, Tim. It's crazy. We don't know who pick number one is going to be, which the last time I can recall that happening, I think it was 2017 when there was Mackenzie Gore, Hunter Green, I think people thought was going to go number one. And then the Twins ended up taking Royce Lewis. But even there was a pretty set top three. I don't think anyone really thought there was going to be anybody outside that. There's legitimately six players that the Pirates could take at number one. They've been tied mostly to Marcel Lemaire, is a very, very good shortstop out of the high school ranks in California. But like Ray said, Henry Davis has been in that conversation. Both of the Vanderbilt pitchers, Kumar Rocker, although less so now, and Leiter have been in that conversation. Another shortstop out of Jesuit and up here in Dallas he was long rumored to go number one overall. You can even make the case that they're going to kind of go off the board and go Khalil Watson and then use savings from him to go overslot elsewhere. It's legitimately crazy. And then, like Ray was saying, if they do something kind of off the wall, then what happens to pick 2, 3, 4? And by the time you get to 10, it could be crazy. So, yeah, we have a sense of who the major players are going to be on the board at 10, but it might look totally different come Sunday night, which is so fun, but it's also really kind of nerve-wracking if you're a draft guy and you've been thinking about this for months and still really have no idea what the top is going to look like.
Because we've been discussing, like, well, what happens if, like, they throw off the board and then someone like Kumar Rocker ends up available at 10, you know?
Especially what's the other team you keep telling me is a wild card, Ray?
What, in the first 10?
In the first 10, yeah.
I think there's kind of a couple, because a couple of years ago there was kind of questions around whether Detroit was ever going to draft draft Casey Mize. Yeah, I didn't think that the speculation was as big as it should have been, or I'm sorry, rather the opposite, that it was bigger than it should have been. But Kansas City seems like I can't really get a pin
absolutely
on what they're trying to do.
100%. Like they're sitting there at 7. If the big six go off the board, then what are they going to do? They could do something. They could reach for Bubba Chandler. Or they could go with Ty Madden or Sal Frelick. And then the other one that you keep talking about is Baltimore too. It's like, what is Baltimore doing at 5?
Oh, that's right.
So yeah, there's so many wild cards here. So the best that we can do is just try to generally have a sense of who the top 8 or 9 are. And then work from there. So it doesn't really matter what order they go in, as long as those top half dozen or so go in the first 9 picks, and we have a pretty decent sense of who's going to be there at 10. So if you don't mind, real quick, I'll just give the listeners just some sense of what we think is going to happen at the top of the draft, and then we can work from there. So there's 4 really good high school shortstops that are probably going to be off the board. So Mayer, that guy was probably number one. Lawler from Dallas, Khalil Watson, who I think could end up being the best player in this draft, just insanely good. He's also only 5'9". You're going to hear that a lot because there's a number of short players in this draft who are going to be pretty good. Yep. And then Brady House, probably more likely a third baseman. He's the one out of the 4 who could slip. But again, I think those 4 are going to be off the board. I also think that Jack Leiter certainly is going to be gone, and Henry Davis, the catcher from Louisville, are going to be gone. Likely, Jackson Jobe, who's the best high school pitcher in the country, and Kumar Rocker are also going to be gone. Not 100%, but likely. So that's 8 right there. Mm-hmm. After that, I think every other player on the board is fair game, with the possibility that Rocker and maybe Jobe are there. By the way, is it Jackson Jobe or Jobe? I've actually never heard his name pronounced. I'm not entirely sure.
Jobe this whole time, just because it sounds Jobe. Funner to say.
It's way more fun, yeah. So I've seen a couple mocks that have now had Rocker slide down to the Mets at 10. If he's there at 10, you take him, you go overslot for him if you have to. I think he's been hyper analyzed with just how much exposure he's got at Vanderbilt. I think he's tired. He's thrown a lot of innings. You take him if he's there. Again, same thing with Jobe, even though the Mets haven't drafted a high school pitcher with their first overall pick in a long time, he's that good. But again, I don't think either of those 2 will be there. Add those to the 4 shortstops, and then of course Henry Davis, the catcher, and Jack Leiter. And I think that's probably going to be the first 8 picks in some order. Then after that, we can start looking at the players left on the board and the ones that we kind of like. Ray, do you kind of agree with this assessment, or do you see another player that's kind of in that top eight, or do you see any of those eight who might be there?
I'm kind of on board with you. Again, the only thing is that I feel like depending on where these guys go, it could throw off some teams' reasoning. And I think in particular, this kind of affects us in a certain way, because let's say, for example, I don't think you and I have been talking about Ty Madden a lot lately, but
we haven't, because I feel like I bring him up almost every day.
No, we have. Absolutely.
So for those of you who didn't hear the last podcast, this is my draft crush. He's a University of Texas Longhorns pitcher. I've seen him pitch in person twice. I've followed his entire career. Like, he's just awesome. And I would love for the Mets to draft him. He's also like typically around the 10th, 12th ranked player. It's very reasonable to think that the Mets could draft him, and I would just go crazy if they did. And I think I've talked to Ray about him every day for like 4 months. So
it's just, I really feel that if he's available, there's really not much way that the Angels aren't taking him at 9.
Right.
I mean, I guess there's a couple of outcomes in which they don't, but it just really feels like an Angels pick right now.
It does. It really does. It also kind of feels like a Royals pick, which is what when you said they're wild card, I'm like 100%, because that's he's that Brady Singer mold. Like I could see them taking him at 7. Mm-hmm. I could also see the Rockies taking him because he's a ground ball college pitcher. They love ground ball college pitchers playing in Coors. He is the premier definitive ground ball pitcher in this draft.
So, the arsenal like?
What's that?
What's the arsenal like on Ty Madden?
Sure. Yeah, he's primarily a two-pitch pitcher. He is a fastball, high-octane. He is what you expect a Texas gunslinger to look like. He's 6'3", 215 pounds, very strong. He's been clocked as high as 99. All of the starts that I've watched on television, as well as the two games that I went to in person, he comes out in the first inning pumping in 97, 98, 98. He'll settle into 94, 96 throughout the outing. And then when he feels like he's at his last batter, he's back up to 98. So really good velocity. He keeps his velocity deep into games better than anybody in the draft. So you might hear about some other players like Sam Bachman hitting triple digits, hitting 102, but those guys don't keep it deep into starts. Madden has the best velocity late into games of any pitcher in this draft, high school or college. And then he has one of the best sliders in the draft. I think depending on the night, you can make the case that it is the best slider in the draft. It falls off the table, incredible depth to it. And he throws both of those very high three quarters. So he gets a lot of good downward movement on his pitches. So a typical start for him is something like 10 ground ball outs, 2 fly outs, and 10 strikeouts. You know, that'll be his night. So it misses a lot of bats, but his contact is weak and it's on the ground, which is kind of the concern with Madden. If this were certainly 10 years ago, you'd see him in the top 5 picks in the draft. But scouts these days are looking more for pitchers who work up in the zone, can elevate the fastball, get that flat fastball, and miss the launch angle generation swing. Madden doesn't do that. His ball dives down towards the plate more like Mike Pelfrey or recently Casey Mize does.
Mike Pelfrey. That is one way to describe it. I love it.
Sure. I mean, you remember how Mike Pelfrey is just.
Yeah, like, I do. And so
Mike Pelfrey was 6'7", Madden's 6'3", but he comes from so far over the top that the ball just dives towards the plate. So he throws 98 miles an hour that just comes sinking down to the plate. It's very hard to square that up. He runs into trouble when he leaves the ball up in the zone, which again is kind of the opposite of what we see with someone like Jacob DeGrom, right? When he elevates that fastball, you can't catch up to it. It's the opposite with Madden. When he leaves that ball up, because of its movement, it can get into that sweet spot where hitters like it. So
is it comparison to like a Taiwan Walker accurate?
It's for current Mets more like Marcus Stroman, if anything.
But up at 97, 98.
Correct. The thing is that Marcus Stroman has better command and he has a third pitch. Madden has a changeup. I would see him throw it maybe once or twice in a game. It's not a bad pitch. Every time I've seen it, I'd be like, hey, that's kind of nifty, but he doesn't trust it. So
you also see him throw that get me over curveball a couple of times.
Oh, he does. Yeah. So he has a curveball. I only ever saw him throw it against left-handed hitters. first pitch in the count. It was very sneaky. Like, I'm just going to drop this in right under your hands for a called strike. And it worked a lot. I don't expect that to work against pro pitching. So I could see him either scrapping the curveball and focusing on the change, or working on that and trying to work it to both sides of the plate against both handed hitters and maybe scrapping the change. My guess is that whatever organization drafts him is going to try to get that change up good. Because if he can throw that with some confidence, he's a three pitch pitcher. He's got probably 65 ish grade on both his fastball and his slider. And the command's not bad. It's not good, but it's not bad either. And he's had just a very, very good college career. I think he's gotten nitpicked a lot, like Rockford, just because of how much exposure he's gotten. But this is a premier arm. He has ace upside, more believably mid rotation, and a very small percent chance that he's a high octane reliever if he can't develop a pitch.
So disagree with like a lot of the reliever potential that people talk about. People think he's just going to be a power reliever sometimes. I can't say I agree with that at all. I think this guy is going to be – he's going to find that changeup, or he's going to find the occasional curveball to be able to get into his repertoire. And just from watching him and also being pushed to watch him by
– forced by your friend.
Like, all right. I can't miss the start. Also, by the way, tell me you've seen Ty Madden live without telling me you've seen Ty Madden live.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So it's I don't want to spend too much time on just one player, but it's just I very rarely get to watch a player this much here in Texas and then have my favorite team draft him. It was cool a couple years ago because Brett Beatty is in Austin. It was a nice Austin high schooler. I didn't get to see him play in person, but was certainly aware of him just being a local kid. So that was cool, and it'd be neat to see him taken again. And Ty Madden would do well in the Mets system. And I want people listening to understand this, that you can look at players from past drafts and be like, oh, why didn't the Mets take them? Or why didn't this team take them? Not every player develops the same way under every organization. There's some organizations that are simply better at drafting and developing pitchers than others. And the Mets are one of those teams. So if, you know, Ty Madden ending up in Colorado's organization, Anaheim's organization, I don't think becomes the same pitcher if he ends up in New York's. So that's just something to keep in mind. It's true for every sort of player with every organization. Yeah, drafting, scouting, that's one part. But then those 2, 3, 4, 5, sometimes 6 years that you spend in the minors, that's really when you become the player that you're going to be as a pro. And that part is overlooked by fans a lot. So Ty Madden could be an ace with the Mets. He could also be a number 5 starter with the Rockies. And the analysis on him would be the same, just different development, different stadium that you end up playing in, different pitching coaches, that sort of thing.
He could also be a bust with the Pirates.
Right. So the Pirates are notoriously very poor at drafting and developing pitchers.
You got some
great arms in the system.
Mitch Keller was like an all-time talent. They have him on the fringe of AAA right now because they just can't get most out of him.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, Jameson Taillon, Garrett Cole.
Yes.
Garrett Cole was, yeah, he was a good pitcher. He wasn't the $300 million man until he left. But
oh, that's a whole nother story. But
oh, yeah. Spider Tax City.
Charlie Morton.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. He just
drafted him, but he was early in the organization.
Stephen and Ray will be back with us next week. Do a little recap rundown of the Mets draft, see what they grabbed, see what who we like. And, yeah, you guys know where to find us. Mets, as we know by now, were postponed on Thursday night, still scheduled for Friday with a single admission doubleheader on Saturday starting at 4 p.m. So by Sunday, we'll have plenty of on-field stuff to recap. And once again, thanks for listening, and sorry about the technical difficulties here, but these things happen, and we'll be back on Sunday. Peace.